Dave, it has been a long time.
But still, it was just Father's Day, and I had the best Father's Day of my fatherhood, certainly. Just had fun, and then my one Father's Day request was to watch the NBA Finals, and I got to watch it. I watched first quarter to fourth quarter, the whole thing.
You've got a
It was
full
amazing.
starting lineup just of children. You're the sixth man, if you will.
How did you have a Father's Day? Did you get anything?
Yeah, the love and appreciation of the people that are most important in my life, Dave. That's what Father's Day is about.
Oh, wow.
I had the opportunity to give
Beautiful.
thanks to other fathers in my life too, which was really what Father's Day is. It's not what you get, Dave, it's what you give.
That's beautiful. Hey, you have a father as well still? That's
Yeah.
great.
It's true. He's still alive. I'm really grateful for that. Craig Wagstaff of Boise, Idaho.
Craig,
He's
yeah.
my role model.
I've met him a time or two. He's a nice man.
Speaking of nice men, we've got returning guests tonight, Dave.
I know. He couldn't stay away. He heard that we were going to talk about the NBA's finals, and he just called in. There was nothing we could do.
Welcome to the podcast, King of Conspiracy Theories, Spencer Gardner.
Hello. So true.
So, Spence, we wanted to
Hello.
start by, I mean, we just witnessed one of the great NBA stories, moments, series, playoffs, really. And we wanted to start by talking about lifetime athletic achievements. And I remember, Spencer, one of the first times I met you and saw you in the wild was on a evening lit floodlights, track, grass, as far as the eye could see. And I was playing Ultimate Frisbee. I just threw the Frisbee as far and as hard as I could. And in the cool, crisp autumn evening of Provo, Utah, I saw this gazelle striding, bounding, bounding, and then leaping probably 27, 30 feet in the air and just plucking the frisbee out of the air for a ultimate frisbee touchdown. And it was you, Spencer.
Yeah, the gazelle part, I don't remember the gazelle part.
But you do
See,
remember jumping 30 feet into the air?
well, that happens on a regular basis. But we had Ben Miskin was a wild pony, I
Yeah,
think.
the wild pony. That guy.
And Jordan was Hanshu.
Yeah.
You and I, we had the IF Boise connection.
That was such a great, great connection.
Yeah.
But Spencer, I heard, although that in my book that would be a lifetime athletic achievement, we want to talk about the greatest athletic achievements from our own memory that we accomplished. And you actually listed something else. What would you say was your great lifetime sports achievement?
Yeah, so I'll set the stage here. There's a long, straight stretch of asphalt on the backside of Longfellow Elementary School in Idaho Falls, Idaho, my hometown. And occasionally races would break out, and people would be kind of like lining these two racing lanes, and then kids would race.
Very Fast and the Furious.
Yes, it was totally like Fast and the Furious elementary school style. So my greatest athletic achievement in sixth grade was that I lined up next to a guy named Doug Bowen.
Oh,
He
guy can
was
fly.
one of those kids. So sixth grade is the time when kids start to get like you get a lot of differentiation in size because some kids are starting to hit puberty already, and I'm still going through that. So meaning right now with my voice cracking and everything, one of these days
Suffice it to
I'm
say,
gonna.
sixth grade, you were not one of the early bloomers. Is that what you're trying to say,
No.
Spence?
No. So it's little me and then this guy who at the time was like one of the biggest kids in school and also the fastest kid in the school. We lined up, you know, they had the women in bikinis out there with their like racing flags.
Yeah, this
Whatever,
is
you know,
Longfellow
totally
Elementary.
sixth grade appropriate. They, you know, waved us off and I tied Doug Bowen.
Whoa. And did he say, like, hey, my shoelace was untied? What was his excuse, Spence?
I don't know. I don't think we talked, not because I mean we were friends and everything, but I think we just kind of finished and then went back into line to race other people. I don't think anyone made a big deal of it. But for me it was like, oh man, I just showed everybody who's boss.
You're like the freaking Carl Lewis of your elementary school.
That's right. The white, scrawny little Carl Lewis.
Wow. Spence, man, that's impressive. Speaking of the number six, what was your greatest athletic achievement?
Cecile, believe it or not, I had a minute having difficulty figuring out if I had any athletic achievements. And then I, of course, remembered my crowning achievement. I trained to run a half marathon through
Wow.
Bryce Canyon
Beautiful, like beautiful scenery. Everything was just great. And half marathon is about 13 miles. 5 miles into it, I got horrific diarrhea. And every time there was a pool available for the rest of the race, I would run and poop and then get back out. So I kept seeing the same people over and over again. I kept passing them and then going to the bathroom, pooping, and then I'd be behind them again and be like, what is this guy doing? It's because I had terrible – and I literally pooped 6 times on this race.
Wow.
Athletic achievement.
Try
that, LeBron.
Everybody talks about Michael Jordan's flu game. Not enough people talk about Dave's poop half marathon.
Yeah. Didn't Howard run a marathon and just like poop in his pants?
That's just a routine thing for Howard. So yeah.
Yeah. He had actually done it before he even got to the starting line, Spence.
You're real interested in the number 6. Do you have something to go along with that?
No, but I did run a race recently, a 5K, Dave, my most recent triumph. Speaking of poop and stuff, and I would say I had some great athletic achievements in my past, but this was my greatest. So my mom's like, we went to Boise, Idaho. Everybody's there visiting family. My mom says, hey, we need a family activity to do together. And I said, that's a great idea. So she signed us up for 5K. And I show up at the 5K, and I am immediately impressed by these t-shirts everybody's wearing, because they say 5th annual Poop Scoot 5K Challenge. And I was like, wow, these are amazing t-shirts. And then I come to find out the name of this event was the Poop Scoot. The name of the 5K, the race, was called a Poop Scoot. Is this a meaningful phrase to either of you?
Wasn't that the name of Dave's half marathon too?
Do you just like slam a bottle of laxative right before you do the race or what?
Well, that's what I was thinking. And I was thinking the only thing that I know of as a poop scoot is what a dog does to wipe its ass after it craps. It's called a poop scoot, right? It poops and then does a little scoot. So I was like, I'm thinking, oh, maybe there's like they're raising money for canine worms or anti-diarrheal medicine for dogs or something. But no, it wasn't that at all. In fact, the city of Meridian, the sewage and waste department was sponsoring this race. And so what they would do is you ran along this little irrigation creek that was wastewater. They would drop a tennis ball in at the beginning of the race. And so if you were fast enough, you could get there before the tennis ball. They were showing you how fast and efficient the wastewater treatment facility was. So no one could beat the tennis ball. The tennis ball got there first. But the arrival point was this really large wastewater treatment plant that smelled like sulfur and feces very strongly. So you're coming in the last half mile and you're like, all right, I must be approaching the finish line. And then you get there and they had this big like gathering station there, and there's a bunch of like city sewage officials saying, congratulations, you completed the poop scoot. For those of you who are willing to stick around, we've got a very special once in a lifetime opportunity to get a full tour of the waste treatment facilities. This is very rare, not usually open to the public. They're basically like, do you want to see how your crap gets turned into reusable water? And it smelled so bad. And they had oranges and bananas and like sport drinks there. And it just smells like eggs and crap. And it was the most amazing end of race, because they also were doing raffle prizes. And I wanted so badly to win one of the raffle prizes, because I was sure that there would be a t-shirt in the bag, and I wanted a poop scoot t-shirt. Well, it turns out I didn't win, but someone in my family won. There was no poop scoot t-shirt, but there was a keychain. And on the keychain, it said like poop scoot. And it had, you know, the smiling pile of poo emoji. It was just a really large version of that on like a keychain the size of a silver dollar. So that was my takeaway. Greatest athletic achievement of my life was vicariously winning the poop scoot raffle.
They really needed Tootsie Rolls as like the
half chewed Tootsie Rolls. Yeah.
I'm also surprised that this wasn't in Garden City.
Yeah, it really should have been. That's a deep cut. Dave, you got to visit Garden City sometime. It's a classic place.
Oh, inside Idaho joke, huh?
Yeah.
I think you should really try and present the laxative idea next year just to see what happens. Because that would be impressive.
Spice up that race.
Make it a crab walk and then, laxative.
Wheelbarrow. It should be a wheelbarrow race. Yeah. Or a three-legged one. Anyway, so those were our great athletic achievements. Obviously, the reason we were starting with that is because we wanted to lead into one of the nation's great athletic achievements. The NBA Finals recently concluded. If you look back at this series, what will be the one image or the one play that you'll remember 10 years from now?
So I think some people are going to say the LeBron block, and that was great. But the Kyrie Irving three,
oh my goodness,
win it. Even as he was taking it, I was yelling at the TV, like, what are you doing, Kyrie? This is a terrible shot. And then he hit it. I thought this was awful play. And then he hits the three to win the NBA championship.
That's a big time step back.
Over Steph Curry.
Yeah. So do you think LeBron was faking the wrist thing? Like milking it? Was it like a Paul Pierce kind of moment?
As I was watching it live, I'm like, it's broken.
That's what I thought.
I thought that he was going to have to shoot the free throws with a broken wrist. But then, like, nothing was ever mentioned about the wrist again. So he must have been milking it. There's no – otherwise, they've been like, x-rays were negative. No, he was – they did no testing after the game.
Do you think he just missed the first one on purpose to make it more suspenseful? I wouldn't put it past him.
It was more suspenseful. I couldn't believe – it was intense. I mean, that last sequence where no one could score any baskets – No one could hit anything, and it didn't make me get bored or think, like, this game sucks. It made every single play more intense. Every ridiculous turnover, every moment was just – I was on the edge of my seat, so glad that all my kids were in bed finally.
It was the most suspenseful sequence of bad basketball because it didn't feel like bad basketball. If that had happened in, like, March Madness, you'd been like, ah, at least they're trying hard, college kids. But you'd be like, this is awful. But these guys were, like, missing shots in beautiful ways. It was just impressive.
And it was the end of a long season and a long postseason for them. You could tell they were just, like, exhausted.
Oh, man. So exhausted. So let's talk for a second, though, about this LeBron block on Iguodala. I know people are going to name this because it really was like an incredible defining moment. Have you ever done in your life anything one quarter as cool or as amazing as that LeBron block on Iguodala?
I don't know that Michael Jordan has even done anything as cool as what that block was.
Yeah.
My hope is someday I can do something that makes my daughters feel like even one quarter as impressed as I was seeing LeBron do that. It hasn't happened yet, but that's my dream.
The only thing that could have possibly made that any better is if the backboard had shattered. And I think the only reason it didn't is that the NBA used slightly underinflated balls, knowing that LeBron was going to trash the backboard with the ball.
That explains the shooting performance, too, I guess, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's the next chapter of Deflategate for you.
Yeah, exactly.
So this marks, we're only 20 minutes in. That's the first conspiracy theory, Spence. That's the longest you've ever waited before introducing a half-baked conspiracy theory. Thanks.
I think I've got a few others. We'll see if I can pull them out tonight.
You mentioned earlier Kyrie hit the three in Steph Curry's eye. Everybody was so impressed with Steph Curry's regular season, but I think you were pretty down on his postseason performance. What?
I think one, I would rate his goatee really poorly. Yeah. I'd give that a grade of a D. I think overall his performance, he was unanimous MVP of the regular season. I know he got hurt and maybe there's an issue there, but he looked like maybe the third best player in his team for the Thunder series and for the finals. There was no point at which he was on the basketball court and I thought, that guy's the best guy out there ever.
True.
Yeah, I don't know what to say really.
Who was the best player on the Warriors then for
Draymond.
That series?
Draymond.
For that series, Draymond.
I don't know, though.
You're talking about the Warriors, the Thunder, or the Cavs series?
The Cavs series. When he was on the court, he was very valuable, but he managed to get himself suspended for a game, which was a serious blow to their – I mean, I think they would have won if he had not been suspended.
Yeah, I think Heath thinks that, too. He kind of admitted it.
So, how would you guys deal with that if you're Draymond? Like, you basically lost the team – the NBA championship because you wanted to hit LeBron in the nuts.
You castrate yourself. Eye for an eye.
Nah, man, you own it. You're just like, I'd do it again.
That's what Draymond would do, that's for sure.
That's why I think he played that lights out, super heroic game 7. He just felt the pressure of that.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, I was thinking we should do some quick hitter observations from the NBA Finals. We've talked about a couple so far. I guess LeBron's block and Iguodala and the Steph Curry criticism. But Dave, what do you got for us? A finals observation that's going to blow our minds.
I was so stoked with Game 7. I just kept watching the after game interviews, everything. Not one, but two after game interviews when they asked him like how he was so focused for Game 7. LeBron started listing movies that he watched. Did either of you guys see this?
Not until you sent me the clip. I've never actually heard LeBron talk for more than 30 seconds, and it was really enlightening when I finally did.
I'm just astounded by the movies that he's like. Maybe it was watching Ocean's 11 or 12 or 13 or Couples Retreat.
Yes.
Or Revenge of the Nerds.
The Revenge of the Nerds was the best one.
No, and Couples Retreat. Couples Retreat that I watched.
Really bad. But the most impressive one is The Godfather. Apparently, he's been watching that like every week throughout the playoffs. But there's conspiracy NBA bloggers that are like, he's not watching it because he never quotes it or anything. He just says that he's watching it. But he says he's watched The Godfather like six or seven times in the past 2 months.
Do you think he just watches with the sound turned off and improvises his own dialogue? That's why he can't quote it?
That's that.
He put a dead horse's head in Kevin Love's bed?
I think Kevin Love did it himself, man. He didn't need any help from LeBron. That's a perfect metaphor for Kevin Love's NBA Finals, actually. Dead horse head in the bed.
So do you guys have an opinion on to which of those movies you think was most inspiring for LeBron's mindset going into Game 7?
Probably Ocean's 12. Yeah, the mid one. Ocean's 11 got him too amped. Ocean's 13 just put him asleep. But Ocean's 12 was the calm in the eye of the storm.
13 is an unlucky number, so he wouldn't have walked on that team.
No.
And there's 12 players on an active roster.
Because that's the one where Julia Roberts is in the movie. And in the movie, she pretends to be Julia Roberts, and like a meta comedy sort of thing. So you know LeBron loved that. He's all over that.
Yeah. Underrated performance from old Julia Roberts. And I know LeBron's a fan of nuanced acting.
So how about you, Spence? Any quick-hitting thoughts, things that struck you?
So LeBron James wore a hat.
Yes.
We're getting a lot of press.
Kermit sipping tea, Spence.
It expand on this, Spence. What hat? What's going on?
So that was it, Dave.
That's all he wanted to say.
So the other thing that's awesome, he wore an Ultimate Warrior t-shirt.
Yes.
With the Kermit sipping tea hat. Yeah. So they beat the Warriors. Like a little sly, dig at the team he just beat. I read an article.
Oh, I didn't even get that, Spence.
Oh, you didn't?
Ultimate Warrior makes great sense now.
Yeah, yeah.
Super clever. That's what you get when you start watching Revenge of the Nerds. You start thinking of this stuff.
Exactly. But there was an article that traced all of the professional wrestling references throughout the playoffs. LeBron had an Undertaker t-shirt. He had the Ultimate Warrior t-shirt. Kevin Love has a wrestling championship belt over his shoulder.
He also wore the Austin 316 shirt in his celebration and did the signature two beer can smash guzzle.
Exactly. So I think they secretly are professional wrestlers that just moonlight as basketball players.
So the series was definitely fixed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
There's conspiracy theory number two. Yes, Dave.
And the Warriors turned out to be the heels. Who knew?
Oh, no, I saw it coming. That's the whole point.
Draymond.
Did you see how they were reacting in the Thunder series? Steph Curry, I'm back!
They were setting themselves up for it. It's true.
Guys, I feel like our lives may be in danger for what we're revealing on this podcast. I've never felt that way before. But we're getting close to an Illuminati-type secret. I think it's all coming together. Steph throwing the mouthpiece into the crowd... Pure WWF scripted, and it hit the kid like right in the face. That doesn't happen unless it's TV scripted and practiced. The Draymond nut punch, I mean, definite heel move. That's straight out of like a tag team match. The Iguodala block, very theatrical.
The mouth guard kid was an owner's son. You can't forget that. So there's like, it goes all the way to the top.
It starts at the top.
And you know all those times Anderson Varejao fell, he didn't actually get hit. It was like that was scripted too.
Yeah, Sideshow Bob over there. Yeah. All right, so speaking of Varejão, this is one of my favorite things about watching playoff series is you see the same team over and over and over again. And so you get multiple shots of the team's bench. When you're just watching one-off games, you don't really appreciate the characters. But when you watch a playoff series, I feel like you get to know as family even the guys that don't play. And sometimes they can win a spot in your heart. I wanted to find out for each of you your favorite bench guys, like deep cuts from each team, starting with the Warriors.
I just pulled up the picture of Kevin Looney you put there with your question, does this look like the face of a 20-year-old human? And no, that man is in his 40s, and I cannot believe he's on that bench.
Yeah, this is like an NBA catfishing story. I think they signed him without seeing him. He just sent them a bunch of grainy YouTube videos, and they're like, sign this guy. And then he shows up, and he's like a 43-year-old rookie. They're like, we can't play him, but he's got a guaranteed contract. He's just got to travel with the team.
It's like when the University of Wisconsin was hiring a football coach, and they got a bunch of applications from around the state with people who said they were, like, good at video game football.
Yeah.
If they would have hired one of those guys, that's the Kevin Looney.
No, it's Kevon, guys. He spells it K-E-V-O-N.
Sorry.
Apologies to Kevon.
Yeah, sorry, Kevon.
I don't know how you pronounce it, but that's one great NBA name as well. So he's clearly my favorite bench mob for the Warriors.
We already talked about mine, Anderson Varejão.
He's your favorite?
The guy is a classic flopper.
Do you think he's regretting the decision to be bought out and join the Warriors? Because he was on the Cavs to start this season. He'd played for them for like 10 years.
He was good friends with LeBron too, right?
Yeah. They should have.
Yeah, but as soon as the flopping is turned against you, you have to get so angry. Like when he's on your team, like, yeah, that's just what he does. But as soon as he starts doing it to you, like, I didn't even touch you, Anderson. What's going on?
This takes the conspiracy even further, though, because there needs to be a little bit of, like,
a former insider.
Well, yeah, like somebody turning on their old team, you know?
A turn cloak, yeah.
So that was his role. He didn't play it very well, but he was, you know, he did all right.
Dave, I know there's a player on the Warriors bench who had a pass with the Suns. He might have had a special place in your heart, but I'm not sure.
I love Leandro Barbosa. When I turned on the playoffs and I saw that he was on the Warriors, I thought that he died or something. I hadn't heard from him in years. And all of a sudden, he's playing some meaningful bench minutes for the Warriors. Yeah. So super in favor. Brazilian blur. He could still hit the open three.
He's also one of the great NBA interviews. I wish we could just ask him random questions on the podcast because his command of English is spotty, but his enthusiasm is off the charts.
So I was just happy to see he's still in the NBA. He's still doing his business.
Yeah, but one of the great left-handers. Let's talk about Cavs bench, though.
See, from Spence's picks, I'm seeing a theme, something kind of hair-related, Spence. Can you explain?
Yeah, well, I picked two. The first is Shumpert. I mean, like, talking about awesome names, I think he beats Kevon Looney for awesome name. Iman Shumpert?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Just the name Shumpert alone is that's all you need. It's
what
Shumpert.
If he pronounced it I-Man, though? Wouldn't that be better?
I-Man Shumpert? That would be the greatest. But, yeah, he's got some sweet hair. Except he was not wearing it well this series.
No, he got a little limp.
No, I've never seen, like, a man bun done in that way before. And he was just going for it. He was all in on the man bun all playoffs long.
It was as if he had cooked – his hair was pasta. And he had cooked all of them as noodles al dente and just tied them together in a bundle halfway up.
Yes.
I'd call it the sheaves of pasta look. It was incredible.
It was okay, but I think the flat top is his look.
Oh, that kid in play, high top fade, that guy rocks it.
Yeah. But my other choice was Dellavedova, because he might be the most unathletic looking person in the NBA since I was the tag.
Yeah, he really is.
He kind of like loops around a bit, and it's like, I keep wondering if he's going to fall forward when he runs.
Do you think he has one leg shorter than the other? Is he like this generation's Mike Miller?
He might be. Or maybe he's got like a wooden leg and we don't realize it.
He's the verbal Kent of the NBA.
So I looked at some pictures of Dellavedova celebrating the championship at Cedar Point. And it was just him riding roller coasters by himself. It didn't look like he was at the amusement park. Like certainly with no teammates, but it just looks like he went there by himself, and he's like, I'm going to ride some roller coasters. I just won the NBA championship.
I believe that I've read a couple of stories about Dellavedova where the whole team has been led into an event, and the security guards stop him because they don't believe he's actually on the team or an NBA player.
Get back to Australia.
That's great sound effects here, Dave. Thanks.
So my guy, a huge fan of this guy. He was actually, I think he was in Rocky IV. He's been in all five Diehards as the Russian villain. Timofey Mozgov.
You know, this is a little known fact as well, but he was also in Lord of the Rings. He was the leading orc at the siege.
Oh, jeez.
He was in The Office too. Dwight Schrute. He can do comedy.
And he plays NBA basketball. No, but seriously, he's just an imposing looking huge dude. I really hope he goes in the film once he retires, because I would cast him in any action movie.
Yeah, one of the most impressive features about Timofey is that he's one of those rare guys whose neck is wider than their head at its widest point. It's like a triangle. It's a triangle. It goes from like shoulders to neck to the narrow point of the head at the top. It's really, really impressive.
That's terrifying. All the more reason to cast him as your movie villain. He's awesome.
Yeah. I was going to say my favorite bench mob guy is probably someone they signed to be Timofey's like big brother, look after him. Sasha Khan, Lithuanian center, went to the University of Canada, a 30-something-year-old NBA rookie. He looks almost exactly like Mark Cuban. I could imagine him being cast in like just about every Father's Day male advertisement for clothing that you'd ever get. He's like the dad of the year. He's just like, hey, I'm generic-looking white dad.
And you don't get that from his name, like Sasha Khan.
Yeah, you're
like,
thinking metrosexual.
I'm not visualizing him whatsoever.
No.
He looks like he'd be – this is like the real-life story of a dad who gave up on his dream to play NBA basketball to raise kids. And then when he turns like 38, then they're like, okay, go after your dream. And then he wins the NBA championship.
Yeah, we've just written some incredible stories for this bench here. We should make some movies about these stories because they're good. The other thing I wanted to know is I put a team photo of the Cavs up on our post here. And it looks like everybody's just like, you know, average the specimens of humanity. Everybody's average looking, except they accidentally smushed the aspect ratio on one guy so that his face is like 50% narrower than everybody else on the team. I don't know what's going on with
Channing Frye. He can hit threes. I know that much.
You got to look at this team photo of Channing Frye and tell me whether he hasn't been elongated unnaturally. There's some kind of performance enhancement going on there.
He's made of taffy and they just pulled his head upward.
Oh, we're such jerks. The other thing
Jumper's
that's nice.
Got the good hair in that photo, though.
I wanted to say, though, we talked about some of the bench characters you came to love. We talked about people that were on the teams. But the other great thing about watching a 7-game series is sometimes you see recurring characters who aren't on the team or just one-off fans who really catch your eye and win over your heart. Dave, you were texting me during a game about somebody that warmed the cockles of your heart.
Did you spot the guy when yes. I texted you, Steele? Were you able to see him?
Within 1 minute, yes.
I love the energy he was bringing to the game. He was underneath the basket. He was very excited about everything, and he was just enormous. Just a very large 20-something-year-old man just loving the Cavs. Like, I can only imagine how happy that guy is right now. Like, I would love to be partying with that guy right now with the Cavs championship. Just big fella, big customer, and, you know, taking up his seat, giving all he had for the team.
I think
Love
he was
him.
A ginger too, Dave. I wasn't quite sure because there was so much of that burgundy on him. It had to be like a 5XL jersey, and he was wearing a t-shirt underneath, which is always a good move.
In the Warriors stadium, in Game 7, Emeline and I noticed a guy wearing like the loudest, most colorful jacket you've ever seen in your life. He wasn't on the front row or anything. It was from like the distance shots, but his jacket was just barely in the frame, and you could see it sometimes. I wish I could have grabbed a still of it.
It's Craig Sager, Dave. Yeah, he's dying of cancer, Spence. He wears loud jackets all the time. It's his thing.
It's all right. Do what you got
to
do.
No, my guy, though, for me was, I've been trying to research this guy and find out more about him, but there's a guy with the huge afro that was always wearing the gold Warriors shirt standing near the scorer's table near half court at every game. He looked, in my opinion, a lot like the scholar Cornel West, and he like stood out. He's like probably African American guy, probably in his late 50s, mid 50s. I was Googling him all over. J.A. Adandi, the sports writer, posted a picture with him, but no one's named him by name. Reddit thinks they know his first name, but I don't have a definitive match on him. This is one of my quests in life, to discover who this man is and bring him on the podcast when we induct him into the Off the Chain Hall of Fame.
The other guy I spotted in the crowd, I'd seen him in multiple NBA crowds before. He's like an old guy that always wears a cowboy hat and has long white hair. Oh. Are you guys familiar with this dude at all?
Yeah, he's some kind of super fan, I think.
Yeah, Jim Goldstein, super fan, like super wealthy, used to party with Wilt Chamberlain and just goes to all sorts of games. So I don't know that he's really a Cavs fan, but he's all over the NBA. Everybody knows him.
Respect. Thanks, fans. You made our experience that much better. Now, Dave, you posed a pretty interesting question. I think you need to lay it on us.
So, guys, think about it. Just the words. Would you rather be a Warrior or a Cavalier?
I think I'd rather be a Warrior.
Good answer. Good answer. Well reasoned. Steel? Well,
I don't need a reason for my answer. Damn. Cavalier in my mind evokes horse, like somebody on a horse, and that just seems like cheating.
Yeah, you don't want to be on a horse. That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I'm a cavalier all the way, Dave. I'm a lover, not a fighter. So I looked this up because I wasn't quite sure. I thought about a cavalier as someone who doesn't really care. They have a cavalier attitude. And then I thought about horses and like guys with like a long lance or something. And as a wagstaff, I figured if you're shaking a spear, wagging a staff, it's kind of the same thing. But I looked it up. In Wikipedia, I found this. The word cavalier has become more particularly associated with the court fashions of the period, which included long, flowing hair in ringlets, brightly colored clothing with elaborate trimmings and lace collars and cuffs, and plumed hats. This contrasted with the dress of at least the most extreme roundhead supporters of Parliament, with their preference for shorter hair and plainer dress, though neither side conformed to the stereotypical images entirely. So it's clear to me that at heart I'm a cavalier. I do love long flowing hair and ringlets. I'm a big fan of brightly colored clothing, lace collars, cuffs. I'm wearing some right now. And plumed hats. I mean, that's my go-to thing. I'm always peacocking with one of those.
And you don't really cheer for the roundheads either.
Yeah, seriously. I'm way anti-roundhead.
So a follow-up question for Spence then, because Steele just answered it. All right, so let's go cavalier or roundhead. Which one are you going with?
Cavalier. I think I'd have to go cavalier. Roundhead could be, I mean, you get some meaty guys on that team.
What I want to know is why there's not an NBA team called the Roundheads. That would be my favorite team. I would buy all their apparel. They would make perfectly spherical hats. It'd be like astronaut hats.
So who's the starting five on the Roundheads, though?
Sam Cassell, point guard.
Yeah. Baron Davis.
Davis. Yeah, that's a good one. Nick Van Exel's definitely on that team.
Shaq might have a spot on that team.
Popeye Jones.
Yeah.
Surprise choice.
I think there's room for Richard Jefferson on there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Richard Davis. Yeah, Jefferson's like a Lifetime Achievement Award. He's like a part owner of the Roundheads.
Yeah. Would Charles Barkley be the player coach?
Yeah, Barkley. Yeah, Barkley. So we got a starting five right there. You got Sam Cassell, Nick Van Exel. You got Baron Davis as your sixth man. You got Richard Jefferson at the three. You got Barkley at the four. And who's our center? Shaq?
You could have Shaq. He'd do a good job. Ostertag had a pretty round head, too.
No, it was like a rectangle, man.
Well, that's because he had a haircut, but...
I think Manute Bol. I think he's got a nice round head.
He
could anchor the defense.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty good team. He can hit from deep, too. That guy's got three-point range.
I wish that more NBA GMs would base their lineups and personnel decisions based on just the team's nickname, Cavalier, Roundhead. Like, you got to fit with the Magic rather than just the best available player.
Yeah, that'd be really cool, actually. Like, if you got some kind of salary cap points, if they're like a deep connection between the player and the team's nickname.
Grizzlies are all the hairiest players in the NBA.
Yeah. Thurl Bailey gets to sign for life for the Jazz because he happens to play the clarinet or something, you know? Oh man!
So guys, do we have any final thoughts on the NBA Finals?
Game 7. What a terrific experience!
It was a treat. I went into it a Warriors kind of pulling for the Warriors, but I'm really happy the Cavs won. They totally deserved it. And man, LeBron, I wanted this. Is it possible that the Warriors are still the best team? We're still the best team, but LeBron was better than the best team in the NBA by himself.
I think they were the best team in NBA history. Kids don't agree, huh, Dave?
Hey, there's no way. Just seeing their performance, like they had more losses in the playoffs than they did the regular season. I think you can make the case, certainly, statistically, they were the greatest regular season team of all time, but they didn't get it done in the playoffs. They barely got to the finals. And then when they got there, they got an amazing lead and then blew it by smacking LeBron in the balls.
And that, for me, is the that's the mark of greatness.
You could certainly say they're the team that's lost the most with a groin punch compared to any other team in NBA history.
Again, the series was fixed. It's a pro wrestling script. I don't know why we need to keep coming back to this point. But that actually brings me to something. Now that the finals are over, it gets us thinking about the NBA offseason. It gets us thinking about next year. It gets us even thinking about things in the past. And the first question that I wanted to ask was, I want to hear some half-baked ideas that we would suggest that would improve the NBA playoffs. I mean, it was great. We had a 7-game finals, and it was one of the great games that any of us have ever seen. But what would you suggest to make the NBA playoffs even better?
This idea just came to me right now. For home court advantage in the finals, you take the best player from each team. They play horse. The winner, their team gets home court advantage.
Nice. Wow. That's so perfect.
That would be great. Yeah, I'm up for that.
Or another take on this, you get the team's mascots to have a dunk contest with trampolines.
Oh, even better. Okay, so here's my idea. First, we eliminate seeds in the playoffs in the sense of, like, the 1 seed from the West doesn't play the 8 seed from the West. Instead, the teams with the 16 best records are in the playoffs, but the team with the best record overall, the number 1 seed, gets to pick their opponent from any of the remaining 15 teams, all the way down to the 8th seed.
As long as this can be done in kind of a UFC-style press conference,
yes,
where then we get, like, just, you know, guys from opposing teams nose to nose with their shirts off, just about ready to go, then I'm in.
And just think about, like, the bad blood there would be. Like, a team is choosing to play you because they think they can beat you. The underdogs would be extra motivated. They'd be super pissed off. They'd be like, what? We finished with the 12th best record, but they chose us because they think we're the weakest? Like, it would be awesome. And the reason why I'd make this extra wrinkle is, think about this here. Whenever you beat a team in a 7-game series, you're allowed to claim up to 2 of their players to replace your own. So the strategy changes, where instead of just picking the 16th worst team, you might be like, hey, this team is 12th worst, but they got 2 players that would make us unbeatable. They've got a center who's really, really good and a shooting guard. Let's take the extra risk of trying to beat that team because we can then claim these 2 players for the next round.
Do you think the Warriors would have taken Westbrook, or would they have left him with the Thunder out of spite?
I think that you have to pick Durant and Adams.
Adams and Kevin Durant, you know it.
Yeah.
I think that's a brilliant idea. I would watch more playoff games if that were the case.
So you got 3 officials in each game, right?
Yeah.
So each game, one of these officials is putting the fix in for one of the teams. Now, if you can guess which official it is and you get it right, you only get 1 guess throughout the game, you then can replace him with one of your assistant coaches.
And what happens if you get it wrong?
Your assistant coach has to leave the stadium, and that official just stays in, so you're screwed.
Or what if the assistant coach is executed?
Even better.
Yeah. Or he's forced to coach an WNBA season.
Yeah.
They were doing promos for the WNBA, like, during the finals, and Van Gundy's like, wait, what? There's not any more national games. What's going on here? And Mike Breen had to explain, it's for the WNBA. And Van Gundy's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, Mike Breen was like so, he was trying to sell it so hard. He's like, the Mercury Lynx facing off next Saturday. A battle of two undefeated teams should be quite exciting. And I was like, it was just dead silence after he said that. It's like nobody was willing to like sell it and be like, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that game next week. It was just like, it was amazing.
Come on, Van Gundy. Any other half-baked ideas? Spence, you got anything else?
This one's really good.
Yeah, this was spurred by a thought that Steele had. A player wants to take ownership of their team.
Yeah.
Kind of like LeBron has done with the Cavs. Mm. A player can challenge their owner for a hostile takeover bid.
That'd be so amazing.
Yeah, if the team wins the championship and the player is awarded the finals MVP, then that player gets control of the team. And
if not, then
he spends the rest of his career playing for the league minimum for that team.
So here's what would be amazing. If they had declared at the beginning of the season and any number of players could write like a sealed envelope that would go to the league office, and all that the league office would do would be publish the number of ownership challenges, and that's it until the end of the season, and they'd reveal it. And use that rule in conjunction with this claiming two players rule from the team you defeated.
Ooh.
And it would get nuts because you could only claim ownership of the team you started the season with.
And then if one of the officials is a plant for the other team and you're trying to figure that out during the game, think of everything that's happening on the court.
Seriously, there's something for everybody. This is high intrigue.
And then you hire a really great dunker as your mascot. So that you can win that home court advantage.
Or what if you claim a player? Like you explicitly claim Russell Westbrook not to play for your team, but to be your mascot so that you can get home court advantage.
And then they release the snitch.
Wow. NBA like you've never seen it before. Okay, other post-finals thoughts. First thing that's happening, this is more pragmatic, but the NBA draft's coming up later this week. Either of you guys watching it?
No. I don't care.
I am. I can't get enough of the NBA. I know that there's nothing else. There's no other sport that's going to fill this hole in my life. So, just a sad, dying NBA season. But I just want it to keep going. I don't want it to stop.
Big off-season stories you're thinking about or excited about, Dave?
I got a few questions. You trade Kevin Love? Is he off the Cavs?
100%. I would trade him yesterday.
Yeah, I would not have taken him in the first place.
I mean, are you holding out for trying something to get something good, or are you just like, Kevin, it's over. Listen, man, it's over.
No, I'd take Scalabrine.
You just trade him for the best mascot from another team that can get you home court advantage.
I'd be like, call Minnesota and be like, hey, is Wiggins available? You want a mulligan on that one?
So Durant, what do you guys think's happening with this guy?
I want him to go to the Warriors so badly.
Or the Spurs. One would be amazing.
If any team, if he goes to the Spurs or the Warriors, automatic championship.
Yeah, he has the power to.
Another of the greatest seasons in the history of the NBA.
How awesome would it be? Oh, man. That's just going to be exciting. I bet he's going to re-sign with the Thunder and go another two seasons and come out of free agency with Westbrook in 2017 because he's like a stand-up dude or whatever. But it would be awesome if he signed with someone else. It really would.
What if he signed with either the and LeBron assembled his rumored superstar team in Los Angeles with all of his pals? That would make for some interesting playoff games.
See, the thing is, I think LeBron wants Carmelo to play with him, and that's such a bad idea because Melo's not that good.
I think you're underrating Melo. I think he's good. I think he's getting older, but he's still got game.
He's like a poor man Kobe. He just takes a million shots, and he's super inefficient.
Yeah, but as Spence says, he's got a very round head, so that's something in his favor.
Yeah, I guess that's true. The Warriors are also chasing Dirk. He's like their backup plan if they can't get Durant.
I'm okay with that. Free Dirk. He's given too much of his time to the Mavs. The Mavs aren't going anywhere, and Dirk still has so much left to give.
Odds that Harrison Barnes comes back to the Warriors next year?
Probably not as good as the odds that he's spent the last couple of nights crying over the fact that he was a terrible, terrible basketball player during that series.
Oh, poor Harrison. I feel bad for that young man. I think he's back with the Warriors.
I was hoping one of you guys would make a joke like, I think the odds are probably 1-for-12 or whatever his shooting performance was. Anyway, let's handicap the MVP
speaking
race.
Of odds, what are the odds that Steven Adams is the preseason MVP favorite?
How do you do odds that are greater than 1-to-1?
I agree.
Vegas has taken it off the board. You can't bet it anymore.
because the Sharks just put too much money on it. Like, Vegas is already in line to lose hundreds of millions of dollars just because they put this bet up for, I think it's just 3 or 4 hours. Yeah, and just everybody was pounding Stephen Adams.
Speaking of Stephen Adams, did you guys see the mural? The New Zealand artist yeah. dropped in Oklahoma City?
It's beautiful. I'm actually going to hire that artist to do that mural in my living room as well.
I've actually hired the artist to do it on my back, so.
Oh, that's different than the fan that you were planning, but I support it, certainly.
I get my front for my wife and kid, but my back is for Stephen Adams.
I don't just love the games, but I love like the coverage and everything around it, probably yes. even more than the games.
Yes.
So I got a few questions for you regarding coverage. Number one, what can we do so that I can understand anything Shaquille O'Neal is saying next season?
I think there's one of two things, Dave. One would be, you know how they have the little app thing that makes people sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks?
Yeah.
You run one of those on Shaq's voice, and he might sound like Barry White or a normal human and like the deep vocal registers. Just speed it up and bring the pitch up like 40%, and then it might sound something recognizable. The other idea, I wish Jordan was on, but they also have these dog whistles, you know, that you can whistle and only dogs can hear it because it's a ultrasonic sound. We need some kind of technology because I think that Shaq's voice is the opposite of ultrasonic. It would be like infrasonic or subsonic. It's a voice that's like so deep and so low that it can't be heard by human ears. It can only be heard by like whales under the sea or something like that. And so we need to run like we filter it through like a dog whistle subsonic sound processor. And then if you just wear one of those headsets, you could be able to hear Shaq's voice in a human dialect.
Spence, I honestly thought you were about to say, I think Draymond could do it. And with just a groin shot.
Yeah, that would do it. That would do it too.
That would also do it.
How about who's your dream team for NBA broadcasting? I'm talking courtside announcers and the halftime crew. Can we go that deep or just start throwing names at me?
Well, I would just want a one-man booth and it'd be Bill Walton.
Just Bill by himself?
Yeah, but doing voices. I just want him to play two or three characters.
That's a terrible answer. Yeah, go ahead, Spence.
I don't know the guy's name. I want the guy with the crazy jacket.
Craig Sager. That's the guy that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, okay.
He'd be great.
That guy's awesome.
He is awesome.
And Charles Barkley, definitely the lead commentator. Mm. And I don't even know if anybody else needs to talk.
So here's what I want, guys.
Joe Buck, Troy Aikman.
I want Marv Albert play-by-play.
Yeah.
Love Marv.
Of course.
He definitely wears a toupee. And then I want the Van Gundy brothers. I want Jeff and Stan. I want Stan out of Detroit, and I want those guys. That's
what,
my team.
What if you could get the Van Gundy mother instead?
Instead of Marv, I'll accept it. That's fine.
I want the Van Gundy family.
Charles Barkley, better commentator or basketball player?
That's impossible. I think yes and yes.
I think he was a great basketball player, MVP, obviously. But I'll watch the TNT show intentionally just because I know Charles is going to be on. I think he's the best NBA commentator ever. So he's certainly not the best NBA player ever, but I think he's the best commentator ever.
I think the expression gets used too often, proud to be American, you know. But I can say with no irony, total sincerity, that Charles Barkley makes me really proud to be American.
So I had a question about Russell Westbrook.
Imagine
that you are Russell Westbrook.
Yes.
Do you think that you are better at basketball than LeBron?
Yes.
Yeah. I think so.
I think I'm the best player on the planet. And I like to make Kevin Durant feel good about himself, but I know I'm better than him.
It's probably true. It's probably true for like half of the Lakers team. That team's deeply deluded.
Dion Waiters, I think he thinks he's the best. But no, yeah, Russ, he, in any given night, he could be, like, he genuinely could be the best player on the planet. Not every night, but certain nights, he certainly is.
So what if they had one of those, like, what's it called, the decathlon, the 10 event, athletic event in the Olympics?
Yeah, Bruce Jenner won that, I think, right?
Yeah. So could anybody beat Russell Westbrook in the NBA in like a decathlon, for example?
I think, you know, I'm not a genius, but I think he's the most athletic guy there is there. I think if he picked any sport, he could be in the upper echelon of whatever sport he picked. I'm glad he picked basketball.
Except like endurance running. He has no patience.
Do you think there's any chance that he could lose anything? Like what if he did Iron Chef? Would he lose?
I don't know, but his vegetables would be chopped really fast. That's all I know. It'd be like savage hacking. I pity the carrot and cutting board that Russell Westbrook gets assigned.
And sources tell me that he's a huge, huge Revenge of the Nerds fan. I think he actually emailed, I think he mailed a DVD copy of that to LeBron for the finals.
Probably. He's like, here, this is their kryptonite. This is the Warriors' kryptonite. They're from the Bay Area. These are their fans.
What if the Thunder had made the finals?
Yeah.
And then he and LeBron both had watched Revenge of the Nerds?
Oh, jeez.
They probably would have punched each other in the nuts in game six and both been out for game seven.
You're talking so like creations of like time, space and stuff that like that's beyond the scope of this show, certainly, and beyond the scope of normal physics. So I'm glad it didn't happen. We're not ready for it.
Yeah, we need to put a pin in that and save it for John Stopher.
If they punch each other in the nards, do either of them feel pain?
I don't know. Kind of Terminator situation there, huh? It's like that Rob Roy scene that Dave's always talking about.
You just grab the sword. You know that Draymond would just grab the sword. He certainly would.
That's definitely not a metaphor, is it, Dave?
any groin shots next year by Draymond? Final question.
He'll still do it.
Yeah. I feel like it's kind of a Luis Suarez then biting thing. I think there's some kind of fetish involved before him. It's like he'll probably explore.
Won't do it in a situation where he'll get suspended, but he'll still do it.
Yeah. I think he might just do it in the privacy of his own home, Dave.
Grabbing the sword.
Did you guys see that? There's some terrible commercial with Draymond making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And it's like a cell phone commercial. And it just goes on for a really long time. Draymond just has some type of weird obsession with peanut butter because he's peanut butter in his sandwich for like a minute and a half and nothing ever changes. So I don't know what that means, but just finish it up, Draymond. Come on.
Dave, I would also vote for, if we were going to select a new euphemism to use all the time in the 2016, peanut buttering his sandwich is a pretty good one. I don't even know what it would mean, but it's pretty good.
That's better than grabbing the sword.
I think the two of them might be like peas in a pod, little twin sayings. He started off just grabbing his sword, and before you knew it, he was peanut butter in his sandwich.
Draymond peanut buttered a few other guys' sandwiches this post.
Yeah, poor Steven Adams.
Sometimes with his legs, yeah.
Yeah, I want to see a mural of that. Okay, so we covered the post-finals. We've talked a lot of NBA, and one of the things, Dave, I think you pointed this out, after everybody wins a championship, it's the same tired old thing. People are playing a song by Queen. Everybody's heard. We are the champions. I mean, it's done. It's played out. Fortunately, here on Off the Chain, we're here to give the people what they want, and we're going to suggest several alternatives that we would rather hear after a team has won a sports championship.
Louis Armstrong, La Vie en Rose. When you win the championship, if you're on your home court, they dump out like all the confetti and the balloons and all that stuff. And I thought that just seemed like the right song to be playing as confetti is slowly dropping towards the floor.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's a taste. I can just see J.R. Smith. I mean, that's like the only song he's got on his iPad, I'm pretty sure. That's like a 1930s talkies movie.
He probably has a lot of Brahms or like Beethoven or something, yeah. Too.
Spence, that's a different era. That's like a silent era film. They're like, in the 7-game series, the Warriors defeated a noble opponent. The game was played on peach baskets. I don't know.
In picking one of these songs, I think that the confetti visual is essential. So yeah, I totally see it, Spence.
Dave, what do you got?
So if you're celebrating some type of championship, you want to be doing it with a band that's composed of at least 30 members. Mm. That's the Polyphonic Spree. And this is one of their just most celebratory Light Day, I think it's called.
The harp is what makes me think it's well suited for the NBA, Dave.
Yeah, you tell me a professional athlete that doesn't love that song.
I mean, very much hip-hop aesthetic. I loved it, Dave. All
right, guys. Steven Adams likes that song.
Seriously. He's Reach for the Sky or whatever. Yeah, that guy's all about that. It's a song about rebounding, really. All right, guys, I'm going to go in a different vein, and I'm going to play a song that I think actually could be played upon winning an NBA championship. And I think race is one of the underappreciated aspects of the modern basketball. Those songs were not songs that I think a modern NBA athlete would know or would listen to, although they were wonderful in their own right. I'm going to play a song by a guy who looks professionally angry. There's something in his face that seems even more deranged than Kevin Garnett. This guy's from Yonkers, New York, DMX, and the song is called Party Up.
To you cowards, then it's gonna be quick. I owe you made up in the jail before. Suck my dick, and all the muffle cats you run with, get done with, dumb quick. How the fuck you gonna approach the dog with some bum shit? I they go to gun click. Now I'm one shit, all over some dumb shit. Ain't that some shit? Hey, niggas remind me of a strip club. Every time you come around, it's like
I'm sorry, but shame on DMX for using that kind of language in a celebratory song. That's something the Polyphonic Spree would never do.
Good point. I think that's actually the official BYU Cougars fight song now.
Totally.
But still, you've got to take into account who's watching these NBA games. And yeah, I'm true. Sure, you know, just a wide population of people are doing it. But I think lots of times it's aimed at the middle class American. And I love DMX. You love DMX. Spence loves DMX. But I don't know if everybody does. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, the middle manager from Topeka, Kansas is a little turned off by that. You're right. You're right. I got to think about not what's played in the stadium, but what's played for the TV audience.
Yeah.
All right. Who's got a second song for us? Replace that bitter taste
with
something sweet.
I've got one. Okay. We're gonna stay with the theme of playing songs that the athletes themselves might listen to. So we're gonna be playing to a different demographic than you and I might be used to. This is the Walkmen.
All right.
This is their song titled Victory.
My Lord, where
Yeah, I think that, again, that's on J.R. Smith. That's the other song on J.R. Smith's iPod.
They're rising hip-hop artists.
So, Spence, I could actually see that song. Like, I imagine hundreds of fans, like, mildly to fully drunk, arms over each other's shoulders, swaying from side to side, like, chanting, singing that song in that building kind of way, you know? That's one of those songs that they might sing at like an English terrace at the end of a soccer match or something. There's something that's kind of primal, choral, interesting about that one.
So the other song I was going to choose was Lump by the Presidency of the United States of America. For that reason, I just thought it has nothing to do with winning anything, but I could see people dancing like crazy to it.
No one's going to ever forget the Presidency of the United States of America and their impact on contemporary music.
How could you?
Impact on society as a whole.
Yeah, it's true. Dave? Second choice?
Steele, I'm going to give you a warning right now. Are you sure you don't want to go before me? Because the song I'm about to play, I don't think could possibly be followed in any way.
All right. Okay. So I was thinking, obviously, everyone knows the go-to would be Sarah McLachlan's I Will Remember You.
Beautiful.
But, I mean, everybody knows that, so I'm not going to pick that one. I was thinking, actually, everybody always focuses on the celebratory aspects of when a team wins, you want something that says, we're the champions. I don't think enough is made that there is also a team that are devastated, that are heartbroken about the loss. And I think there should be a song reserved. So imagine if you're the Cavs, you go in onto the Warriors' home court where they've lost twice all season, and you're playing a game 7 on someone else's turf, and you beat them at their home. This is the song that should be reserved for those instances. When you've beaten a team in a game 7 on their home court, this song should be played as loud as possible through the stadium and in the loser's home locker room for up to an hour after the game ends. There's nothing that'd be more cruel than that, really.
Except that it's a great song. I mean, you could at least be like, oh, yeah, this is a good song.
Through the tears? Through the tears.
I think you got to give the winning team the opportunity to pick the song. I think that's a great one, but you could pick just, you know, a really irritating song. I don't know.
Okay, so clearly it wasn't the best song to end on. We need you to really finish this off here, Dave.
I know you're familiar with the Dire Straits because everyone on Earth is intimately familiar with the Dire Straits. But are you familiar with something called the Walk of Life Project? Do you know this?
No, Dave. And I mean, the Dire Straits have been peanut buttering my toast for years.
So a young man came up with a theory, and I think it's passed beyond theory into law, that the best way to finish any movie is to play the Walk of Life by the Dire Straits. And so why would that not apply also to an NBA championship or any championship of any kind? Just play the Dire Straits. Check out the Walk of Life project because it's great. Let's just play it. I can feel as Kevin Love and LeBron James, their eyes meet as this song is playing, and they both kind of nod at each other and just accept the whole ride, the whole season, everything they've been through, and they're here now, they're champions, and it was all for this. They nod at each other, gently.
Walk of Life.
And then they kiss.
Yeah. That's true, Dave. That should replace We Are the Champions in every sports situation. Not just after winning an NBA title. Well, we've covered the important topics. We've definitely talked basketball to death, and we've played a bunch of songs. Mm-hmm. I want to end it with some book wisdom here, gentlemen. And this is a basketball-related poem. I have a friend from school that I used to play basketball with here in town, and he wrote a great poem. It's called Throwdown. It's a basketball poem, Dave.
No better genre of poetry.
Throwdown by Josh Kalscher. The buzz comes from the baseline and the rubble border to the jungle here at the village's one standing rim, the only cement left with lines. And even the boys hitting short shots know to hold up, shirtless in the midday sun. And even the girls stop at three notches in the nearby trees. Even the washed-up drunks jacking threes grow still, let their misses trail off in the high grass. They know him by the shadows off his shoulders, straight from the Guam rec leagues, the legend of cracked backboards and splintered posts, blow-bys and block shots to the bleachers, basking in the crowds, rubbing dust clouds in the windy seasons. The air ball swishes at the no-net courts of toll, the half-quiet girls towing the patched grass, staring, lonely for no one. Here he dribbles twice to his left and loops a no-look pass to himself, and if there's a word for the curves he made, the arc and degrees of space in his wake, lost in the launch of it all. There was enough jump under the palms of his feet for all the rolling eyes, all the bandanas flapping when he rushed breakneck to the basket, the rock grinding to a halt on the touch before takeoff, the overcast background by his height, higher than any man, poster high, ladder high, higher than their father's hands, cupped on his forearm and cocked like a neck about to bite, the ball ripping over the rim with sprays of rust flecks and rotted wood, and a reverb of grunts makes its way in waves, and all the boys stand up, and all the almost dunkers, all the fingertip rim touchers, the stilted wrists and lead feet, all the stomping ones, the finesse boys with not enough ups or the right kicks, all the tall ones with no hops, all the jammed thumbs, they all watch the ball's slow roll in the gravel, the endless mud from potholes never patched, praising the last bounces, the previous motion hanging muggy in the air, seeing the ball lean from lace to lace, still spinning and not stopping.
My first thought is I like it, and my second thought is I want him to write one regarding LeBron's block of Iguodala.
I was thinking that exact same thing.
All right.
And then my second thought was there wasn't a rhyme in that entire poem.
That guy sucks.
I know.
I'll let him know he's no Dr. Seuss. I'll let him know. I'll tell him.
Okay.
You may not have learned as much about poetry as I have over the past year and a half. It doesn't have to rhyme from what I've been told by Estelle. So,
no way.
So it's all right.
I took a poetry class from Shel Silverstein. It always must rhyme.
There you go, guys. I think we nailed it. That's about a guy dunking in Micronesia where Josh lived for a couple of years. And it's fitting. It's a fitting way. I'll commission a poem from Josh about the LeBron dunk. I know he was watching. Big sports fan. And that's it for this week.
All right. Once he writes it, send it on to us. Actually, we'll read it on the show. I'll commit to that.
I'll bring him on. I'll see if he'd come on as a guest. He'd be a great guest, actually.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I'm just glad we did this. It was important. If I feel like I can let the NBA go now.
Wow.
Me too.
It's a big thing.
Kind of excited for October, though.
What's in October?
The baseball playoffs. The Cubs might actually win.
Wow.
That's a tougher sell to me, Spence, but we'll see.
Wake me up when the A's make the World Series, and then I'll watch.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.
Have you been outdoors at all? You're looking kind of feral.
What's the problem with actually having an 8-to-5 job?
You should just work the midnight shift at a gas station. Just roller skate to work.
You can bring home greasy chicken for the family to eat. You make sure you save a little bit back for Mark because he's going to poke his head in. He's going to want some chicken.
Yeah, he is.
That's really why I still don't like Mark as much as the rest of you guys is the friggin' chicken. I'd be like trying to make out with Sheena. I'm making my move, Mark. Come on.